The complexity that we're able to hold in this place and to hold within our own families never ceases to amaze me. I think we've seen that even now. As my own interest has grown in interfaith dialogue and collaboration, I've come to admire the work of Eboo Patel, founder of Interfaith Youth Corps, or IFYC for short. IFYC gathers college students in particular for the purpose of service, and along the way, students of diverse faith backgrounds and no faith backgrounds build relationships and hear one another's stories. One of the voices that has emerged out of the IFYC movement is that of Chris Stedman, an atheist committed to the cause of interfaith dialogue and service. Last year he came to Furman, and my wife Maria had the chance to host him and get to know him a little. This morning I want to share some of Chris Stedman's story with you. In an ideal world, he would be here to share his story himself. But given we don't have that kind of guest speaker budget, we'll do our best to hear from him today without his physical presence. His story can be found in his book, Faithiest, How an Atheist Found Common Ground with the Religious. And I commend it to you. Chris is currently the executive director of the Yale Humanist Community, and he previously served as a humanist chaplain at Harvard. Stedman, as I've already said, is an atheist, a humanist, and he spends a lot of time working alongside religious people, engaging in dialogue, serving with them. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Let me go back and tell some of his story chronologically as he does, so that we can get more of a sense of how he arrived at his work, at his commitments, at his passions. Chris Stedman grew up in a family of meager means in Minnesota. They were non-religious for the most part. He was baptized as a United Methodist, but his parents weren't religious at all and didn't participate in religious services. They did celebrate Christmas and Easter, but strictly as secular affairs. Stedman says that he never heard the word God growing up in his house, though it's not as though his family was for or against religion. Rather, he says they were irreligious, and they were open and tolerant. In middle school, Chris began to explore religious beliefs and participation. He had a friend who was Jewish, so he attended a synagogue with him and participated in his family's Seder celebration. But after some exploration, he decided that he wasn't Jewish. His family attended a Unitarian Universalist church for a while, too. But given it was in the next town over 30 miles away, they gradually stopped attending. Then, as Chris longed to connect with the popular kids at school, he accepted an invitation to their Christian youth group, where they served free pizza. On his first visit, and with the benefit of hindsight and self-understanding, he says that he was attracted to another young man who was one of the welcomers at the church. And after attending on several occasions, he was sold and passionately began studying and practicing his newfound faith. But quickly, this was uncomfortable as he discovered two things simultaneously. One, he was queer, and two, that the church would kick him out if they found out about this. The pairing of his self-understanding and his fundamental Christian beliefs created tremendous internal conflict, and he developed strong feelings of self-loathing. He tried to study all that he could about homosexuality and Christianity, and during this quest, he was terrified that someone would find him out and discover his secret. He was so troubled that he even contemplated suicide along the way. One day, his mother was straightening his room, and she found a notebook where he had been detailing his agony. She knew her son was completely devoted to his newfound faith, so she searched for someone, a religious someone, that she thought might get through to her son. With wisdom and insight, she found a Lutheran minister in town who could offer a contrasting perspective to Chris, and she drove her son to meet him moments after revealing to him that she knew of his struggles. Pastor Dale, the Lutheran minister, told Chris that his family didn't want him to change his queer identity, and neither did God. He reached for Chris's teen study Bible, flipped open to the pages about sexuality and alternative lifestyle, and crossed them out in a big X with a pen, and he called it dehumanizing garbage. Pastor Dale told Chris that God made him just the way he was. Stedman says that his mom and Pastor Dale saved his life, though this had left him angry and disillusioned with the church. But he didn't walk away from Christianity at the moment. Instead, he became a queer Christian activist for a time. Stedman's college years were the time when he slowly said goodbye to God. This didn't happen all of a sudden or with some great revelation, though his moment of clarity came in the days following a tragedy that unfolded in his backyard. Many of you probably remember when the I-35 bridge collapsed over the Mississippi. 13 people were killed and 145 more were injured. Stedman was in school in Minneapolis at the time, and with his campus adjacent to the Mississippi River, he went out to see the bridge as the tragedy unfolded. When he heard prayers offered in response, Stedman realized that he didn't believe in God anymore. Anger towards Christianity filled the void where his faith once sat. Though his belief in God had faded away to the point that he could declare it was gone, his commitment to service remained strong. This was in part helped by his college's philosophy that learning didn't solely take place in the classroom, and students were required to participate in off-campus community work. In fact, Stedman had chosen the school for this very reason. While some of his classmates wrote off entire groups of people as hopeless, Stedman instead invested in relationships with people he was serving, declaring, "Service work should never be a one-way street. Otherwise, it's tempting to imagine yourself as a hero and those you're assisting as in need of serving, of saving." One afternoon at the community center, Chris found himself in conversation with a Muslim woman who was wearing a hijab. She began sharing her struggles and fears of going out in public. This was in the days following 9/11, after all. She said, "You know, some days I'm really afraid to go out in public because of how I dress. I just get tired of dealing with the stares and jeers that my hijab elicits." They both sat silently for a few minutes, and then Chris said to her, "It's not exactly the same thing, but I think I can empathize a little. Sometimes I get really nervous about the looks I get when I'm holding another man's hand in public." He took a risk. He wasn't sure how she would respond, but she smiled and went on to tell Chris how her belief in Allah sustained her when she was afraid. Then she asked him, "What gives you strength when you get such looks, or when someone says something disparaging about you because of who you are?" At this moment, he froze. He diverted the conversation and refused to speak of his values and identity as an atheist. but something powerful had happened. In the sharing of their stories, they found common ground and understanding. In the days and weeks that followed, Stedman came to discover that he was quarantining himself from meaty conversations of mutuality because of his unwillingness to take religious identity seriously. He was still angry about the pain he had endured as a religious person, and one drunken evening, he even kicked in a church sign, shattering it into many fragments that lie on the ground before him. He came to realize that hating religion and the religious wasn't making him happy. It felt just as wrong as being religious had. This served as a turning point of sorts. Stedman wanted to find ways to engage religious people in positive ways, and he signed on as an intern with the Interfaith Youth Corps. As he built relationships with coworkers of many different backgrounds, he eventually found himself in conversation with another Muslim woman. This time, as he told the story, he didn't withhold his queer identity or his atheist identity. He found room to tell the whole of his story, and he was able to hear the whole of her story, too. He writes, "That day we discovered ourselves and the other story, and we were both transformed." He continues, "The moment I shared my story as an atheist, others felt more comfortable sharing their own. Whether these stories were about religion, identity, or social change, as I worked with more and more communities around interfaith issues, it became apparent that in a culture dominated by religious politics and conflict, sharing experience of cooperation across lines of a difference was essential, and that there was a hunger for doing so." These experiences pressed Stedman more and more towards secular humanism, towards a positive framing of his own worldview. He read everything that he could get his hands on about humanism and found home in the secular humanist articulation of atheism. He offers this definition of humanism taken from an edition of the Humanist Manifesto. "Humanism is a progressive philosophy of life that without supernaturalism affirms our ability and responsibility to lead ethical lives of personal fulfillment that aspire to the greater good of humanity." As he embraced this newfound articulation and identity, he also declared a new vocation and purpose for his life: to help organize non-religious communities in a way that provided safe space for the non-religious and reached out to those with different religious beliefs in an attempt to understand and empathize, not bulldoze or mock. Chris is currently living out this vocational purpose. As I mentioned, he served as a humanist chaplain at Harvard alongside Greg Epstein, who wrote the book Good Without God. And presently, he serves as executive director of the Yale Humanist Community. He sits in a place where he's often criticized by the religious, as well as by many in the new atheist movement who are more anti-religious. But he continues on with his work nonetheless because he believes deeply that it matters. And I, for one, am so glad that he does. So why might I go to such length to tell someone else's story this morning? Most simply, I think it's because his story is one that I found compelling, one that I found resonance with, one that I learned from. I hope and trust the same was true for you. My wife Maria often says that everyone has to come out as something at some point in their lives. For Chris Stedman, coming out as queer was first. Sharing his worldview as an atheist, as a secular humanist, and being willing to share his values and ethics with other religious people was another coming out of sorts. We all have layered identities, and perhaps one way we make peace with the layering of ourselves is by sharing our stories and hearing the stories of others with whom we are in relationship. Another reason is that I think it's important for us to hear from humanist voices. We have humanists in our midst, like Kathy and Steve Jaggers, who have shared their stories, and we've found that we've learned much from them. Many have found home in this place, at least in part because their humanist identities are welcomed and embraced. These reasons and more are certainly true. And it's because the religious, non-religious divide has a storied history during this past century. Think back with me to the Scopes trial in Tennessee, where John Thomas Scopes stood as the defendant for challenging the illegality of teaching evolution in a state-funded classroom. This was a debate about science and religion to some extent, but even more than that, it was the story of growing differences between moderate and fundamental Christians, with moderates arguing science was not inherently opposed to the Christian narrative, and fundamentalists concerned that evolution negated the scriptures and the creation story they held dear. Scopes was convicted, and in many ways this trial imagery has continued to play out in our religious, non-religious debates. Along the way, the caricatures of people who hold atheist positions remain. Anti-God, anti-ethics, anti-morality, anti-everything good. These caricatures do very little for real engagement or dialogue. At least twice since I've been serving as your minister, I've found myself on trial for what it means to be a Unitarian. These questions come in rapid fire, and it feels much more like a cross-examination than it does any real curiosity or desire to understand. So today we find ourselves talking about the fifth principle of Unitarian Universalism, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregation and society at large. At the same time, we find ourselves in the midst of an election season where difference has been used to divide and separate us, and the old fires of racism, sexism, and hate have been stoked. So we look to people like Chris Stedman to offer us a vision of a different way forward, a more positive future that we might engage and journey towards. As Unitarian Universalists, we actually share much in common with Stedman. It's service. It's the pursuit of justice that grounds our gathering. And yet we have much diversity in our midst. How might we listen to one another's stories, to how we make sense of the world and to what motivates our service? How might we practice telling the stories of what we are for? And how might we learn to ask questions and invite the stories of others with compassionate curiosity? We so need another kind of conversation, another kind of dialogue, another kind of living out the fullness of our humanity together. Chris has this to say in his afterwards, and I close with his words this morning. In my youth, being right held ultimacy. I valued precision and accuracy and was sure to correct anyone I felt was wrong. I thought I was doing people a favor by correcting them. Now I strive to lead with listening instead of lecturing. We can be dogmatically fixated on who is right and who is wrong, or we can discern a way to live together in tension and ambiguity. Joining forces, we can buck the clash of civilization story that has come to define our world and dictate a new narrative, one that bridges the religious and the secular rather than threatening the other with extinction. By reaching out to those who see things in a different way, we have the opportunity to write a new story about religious difference. In the words of Native novelist and scholar Thomas King, "The truth about stories is that that's all we are. Want a different ethic? Tell a different story." It may sound overly simplistic, but at Chris, I really do believe that the only way to begin writing this story is to tell our own and listen to those of others, to step boldly and defiantly across lines of religious and non-religious identity and share our experiences in hope that we might build understanding through relationships of commitment and cooperation.